The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 38, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 4th, 2008, in Sydney, Australia.
So tonight, we are blessed with the most sublime of all opportunities. We have been blessed with the opportunity to study Bhagavad Gita. Tonight we are reading from chapter number 4, text number 38.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nahi yanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tatsvayam yogasam siddha kalenatmani vindati.
In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service. And when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita.
Vandeha Shri Guru Shri Jata Vadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shya Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
So we are most fortunate that by the grace of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we have this knowledge. We have the topmost knowledge. Krishna consciousness. Krishna explains in chapter 9 Raja Vidya Raja Ghuyang Pavitram Idam Uttamam Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam Shushukam Kirtamam Yiyam. This knowledge is the king of education. It is the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So, at the present time, the whole world is in chaotic condition. There are so many problems which they face, and they do not know how to solve these problems. I'll be honest with you. They don't know. They're just shooting in the dark. But the biggest problem that they have of all is they don't really realize what the real problems are. They're taking economic development to be the biggest problem, you see. They don't realize the biggest problem is we have four things known as birth, death, old age, and disease. That's the biggest problem. So if these problems can be solved, birth, death, old age, and disease, you see, all the other problems will automatically be solved. So where have they solved these problems? They're promising us that they will, in due course of time, eliminate all diseases. But we see as soon as they cure one disease, another one comes to take its place. And the new ones are worse than the old ones that they eliminated. The real problem is as long as we have sinful activities, we must get the reactions in the form of disease, pestilence, war, etc. They're thinking that through technology they can solve the problem. The real solution is stop committing sinful activities, you see. Stop creating karma which forces you, obliges you to suffer. This is the simple solution. Actually, Newton taught this principle in one of his laws of motion. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. The law of karma was discovered by Newton, actually. Rediscovered. You see? The Bible also taught that principle. As you sow, so shall you reap. But they go on committing all volumes of huge quantity of sinful reactions. They think by science we'll hold off the reactions. It doesn't work that way. They may hold it off in one way, but then it'll come in another way. You ever had a wall-to-wall carpet with a bubble in it? And you step down in one place to get rid of the bubble and it comes up somewhere else? You see? That's what it's like in a material society. They say, yeah, we're going to solve the AIDS problem with a new anti-AIDS medicine, but then some other disease comes and takes its place. So this materialistic method for solving the problems is completely impractical because it doesn't really work. They say they're going to conquer over death, but the latest statistics have shown the death rate is still, 100%, that's right. The death rate is still 100%. Is it? So, if we want to conquer death, then we have an actual method here how to do that. Through Krishna consciousness, you can achieve immortality, amrita, you see. It's interesting, in Sanskrit, the word for nectar, it's like charanamrita, the nectar from the lotus feet of the lotus, you see. The Sanskrit word for nectar, literally it means amrita, or no death. That's what the literal word, literally it means deathlessness. Amrita, deathlessness. So what we call nectar, you know. It means deathlessness. So, in this material world, there is no nectar because everything is contaminated by this. Everything is, as the Bible says, the valley of the shadow of death, you see. This material existence is the valley of the shadow of death. The shadow of death is hanging over everything here, everything. But when you come to Krishna Bhakti, by the grace of Sri Krishna, who is the Supreme Person, actually, who controls everything. When you come to Krishna Bhakti, then you achieve amrita, or deathlessness, nectar. A devotee tastes the real nectar, and that nectar is deathlessness. Because once you become free from death, once you become deathless, then what else can bother you? Because death is the ultimate anxiety that everyone has. Every other anxiety is subordinate to the anxiety of death, you see. Someone who conquers death, he's completely free of anxiety. Nothing can faze him anymore because he's situated in a different plane of consciousness. Within the modes of nature, there are so many things going on. Good, bad, beautiful, and ugly. But Krishna consciousness situates one completely beyond these material modes of nature on the transcendental platform. This verse nicely describes that transcendental platform. There is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So we are teaching that here. We are teaching you how to become accomplished in the practice of devotional service. So that kalinatmani vindati. So that in due course of time you can enjoy this knowledge, you can relish this knowledge at every minute. You see, in material life, we base our happiness on the external situation. Well, do I have food? Do I have proper clothing? Do I have this? Do I have that? It's all based on my senses. Our happiness is based on our senses. But no matter how much happiness you may arrange for your senses, ultimately it will be a failure. That's a failure. Ultimately it will be failure. You cannot hold off old age, disease, and death, no matter how nicely you arrange for your senses. But if one comes to the transcendental platform, which is beyond death, and one actually learns how to be happy on the transcendental platform, then nothing in this material world can ever disturb you ever again. Because your happiness is beyond this material existence. So this is the supreme position. And people don't realize it, you see. People don't realize what a great opportunity this is. It's difficult for the average person to understand this even. Because they're completely rooted into bodily consciousness. We see that people have an opportunity to hear, but then they go away. You see, they have a greatest opportunity to actually hear, learn, realize, and understand, and enter into pure bhakti, but they go away because they don't realize how important it is. They're thinking in terms of their happiness, sense happiness, you see. They're thinking that's actual happiness, serving my senses. So in this way, they spend their whole life in indriya seva. What do they get? Old age, disease, and death. That's the reward. But one who actually cultivates this mood of Krishna Seva, serving the Supreme Person, as described in this verse, he enjoys unlimitedly, just within his heart. He can be in any condition materially, it doesn't matter. Within his heart, he has realized Krishna. And in that state of consciousness, he can see Krishna everywhere, and he can see everything within Krishna. Yamang pashyati sarvatra, sarvangchamai pashyati, tasyahang na pranashyami, satchamena pranashyati. You know that verse? Chapter 6, text number 30, Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything within me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Just imagine if you can be never disconnected from Krishna, for not even for a second. It's like, imagine you're going through the forest, a dense, deep, dark jungle. But you have a very special companion who's accompanying you in that forest. And you're never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to you. You see, that's Krishna. We're in the deep, dense, dark jungle of material existence. But one who becomes connected with Krishna through this process of Krishna Bhakti, he always is packed up tightly with Krishna at every minute. He never feels separated from Krishna for a second. He always feels, he's always seeing Krishna and he's always feeling Krishna's presence at every minute, wherever he goes. So that's called Krishna consciousness, and that's what we're teaching you how to attain that state to where you're fully awake to Krishna at every minute. So all you have to do is become accomplished in the practice of devotional service. So this is a scientific process. It's a process. It works. It's like baking a cake. It's a certain process. You follow the instructions. You put in this much flour, this much sugar, this much butter, this much vanilla, you see, this much baking powder, and this much milk, and you put it in the oven at a certain temperature, you grease the pan, flour it, and then, lo and behold, you have a cake, you see. Because you followed the instructions. So what we're teaching here is not difficult. You don't have to be some kind of, PhD or mystic yogi who can stand on his head for 24 hours without blinking an eyelid, blinking his eyes. It doesn't require any extraordinary qualification. All you have to do is follow instructions. Just like somebody can bake a cake. Anybody can bake a cake if you just follow the instructions. So we will tell you exactly what to do, how you can actually achieve that state where you can see Krishna at every minute, within everything and everything within Krishna. We'll teach you how to achieve that state. That's what's going on here in this Krishna consciousness movement. We're training our members how to see Krishna at every minute, at every step. So you're never fully ever separated from the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. Krishna is not a Hindu myth. Krishna is more real than this floor. He's more real than your body. Because these things are just a temporary arrangement of the material elements, you see. But Krishna is the source of everything. Everything is emanating from him. If you look out at Sydney, you see, you look out at the Sydney harbor, you see, the whole thing is resting on Krishna. If you take the Sydney harbor minus Krishna, the whole thing just, it just vanishes into the ocean. There's nothing left. You see? Matak parataram nanyat kinchirasti dananjaya. Mayi sarvam midam pratam sutre mani gana iva. Krishna says, O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. So the whole existence is resting on Krishna. The whole Sydney is resting on, Australia is resting on Krishna. The whole universe is resting on Krishna. He is the power that holds everything together. So just imagine if you can become directly in contact with the powerhouse, how much energy you can have, how much spiritual energy you can have, you see, just by becoming connected with that supreme powerhouse. So how do you be that person who controls and owns everything? So how do you become connected? Bhaktya, you see, by bhakti. Through devotion. Krishna is unconquerable. Nobody can conquer Krishna. But that supreme unconquerable personality becomes conquered by love. Simply try to learn how to love Krishna. That's all you have to do. And then Krishna, who owns and controls everything, he will voluntarily place himself under your control. Can you imagine that? That supreme person who controls and owns everything will allow himself to be controlled by you if you become fully absorbed in loving him. So this is the greatest science that has ever existed in the history of the universe. And that's what we are teaching you. kindly try to learn and master and become accomplished in this science, and you relish the sweetest happiness at every minute for all of eternity, and it would just increase, 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 increase. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah. I can't, my hearing is really bad. I couldn't hear a word. Maybe somebody can tell me in my, Bhadra Steve, you come and tell me what she's saying. In my right ear. Can you hear what she's saying?
Ah,
oh, okay. What is it? So, so one thing I've gathered is you're saying Krishna is Atmaram.
No.
We are Atmaram.
No, we are meant to become.
Yes.
So why do we get entangled into all these different kinds of relationships and relation? And then in the third chapter we are meant to do duties, and then she's saying that.
Wouldn't do what?
All these things in relationship. All these relationships and different duties and different things. That wouldn't you do it?
If you're Atmaram, why do you need any relationships?
Well, why would you get like family life, or why would you
If you're Atmaram, then why would you have relationships, family relationships and friendships with devotees, etc.? Why would you have
family life, jobs,
Yes. Well, if one is fully situated in Krishna consciousness, he doesn't require anything, actually. But he simply does whatever Krishna wants him to do. That's all.
Would that mean it's a sannyas life? Or would that mean a sannyas life to be Atmaram?
Next life?
Sannyas
life. Actually, everyone should become sannyasi. Even if one is a married man, or he should be in the mood of being a sannyasi, completely absorbed in pure devotional service. And the mood of completely being renouncing all material sense gratification is meant to be practiced by everyone, not just the sannyasis. Even if I'm a businessman, Prabhupada said how a factory worker can be a sannyasi. By offering his income to Krishna. He's a factory worker, okay, an assembly line in a factory. Even he is a sannyasi, Prabhupada said. So, one should simply take whatever instruction one receives from the spiritual master and carry that out to the best of one's ability. That is the real meaning of renunciation. Spiritual master is a representative of Krishna. So, whatever instruction he gives me, I carry that out. Just like Prabhupada, he was given the instruction to preach to the English-speaking world. Prabhupada could have sat peacefully in Vrindavan, Atmaram, you see, enjoying meditating on Krishna, bathing in Jamuna, thinking of meditating on the Goswamis, etc., etc. But no, he took so much trouble for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world to please his spiritual master. So, that is the disciple. He wants to please his guru. That is his happiness. It's not that he's thinking, oh, I'm Atmaram, I don't have to please my spiritual master because I'm Atmaram. No. He wants, his happiness is, he's totally dedicated to pleasing his spiritual master. That's his happiness. that answer your question? Okay, very good. Any other questions? Yeah.
Prabhuji, you said that one of the biggest anxieties in this world is death. Could you see many people committing suicide, especially in places like Japan? So, how do you understand that?
Yeah, if death is so fearful, then why are so many people killing themselves? That just shows how miserable they are. Really. When they go to commit suicide, they're scared of it, I guarantee you. For they're so miserable, they're thinking death, even though death is so fearful, it must be not as bad as life. They don't realize that the karma of committing suicide puts them into a more hellish situation than what they were trying to get out of. You see, that's their foolishness. They have to become ghosts. Anyone who commits suicide, they become ghosts. A ghost is the most hellish nightmare. You see, you have all these material desires and no senses with which to fulfill them. So the ghost, he tries, when someone's sleeping, he tries to enter into their body and then take over their body to vicariously enjoy sense gratification through them. It's a hellish nightmare being a ghost. And they have to live for a very long time in that body, until they finally burn off the reaction for having committed suicide. So it's the most foolish thing someone can ever do, is to commit suicide. They're much better off to live, be much less hellish if you just keep living, no matter how bad your situation is. Yeah. So when they commit suicide, they're living in their subtle body, and your question is, how long do they remain as a ghost?
Yeah, is it the same time that they were destined to live in their ghost body?
The same amount of time as...
Do they live in the same amount, duration of life, as they had a gross body?
Oh, gross body, yeah, I missed the word gross. I was thinking you said ghost, it didn't make sense, yeah. No, they have to live much longer. So it's better just to write it out in your gross body and get it over with. No matter how hellish it is, you know. It's like I'm going through hell now with this deafness thing, you know. It's no fun being deaf, being hard of hearing is like embarrassing. Wherever you go, what was that? What was that? What was that? You know, it's like a nightmare, But better just to say, okay, somehow Krishna has given me this. I just have to live with it and tolerate it, you know. And when Krishna is ready to give me another body that isn't hard of hearing, then all right. But I'm not going to try to speed up the process. For some reason, Krishna put me in this condition. I don't know why, but I'm going through it, so I just got to take it. So all of us have our different things we have to go through at a certain point in life. Especially as you get older, everybody has to suffer something. Everyone has to suffer some kind of a setback. So you just live with it and say, okay, this is Krishna's mercy. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmarkatang babakam tadvagmapurvirvadadang namaste jiveta samukti. My dear Lord, those persons who are constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who suffer the resultant actions for their past misdeeds, simultaneously always offering you respectful obeisances from within the innermost core of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So why lament the demise of the body? Why not just become liberated? If you take the right mood of saying, thank you, Krishna, somehow or other this is, I don't understand, but you understand, and I have faith in you that somehow this is a blessing you're giving me. So let me just take it in a mood of gratitude. As soon as you take all the reverses of material existence in a spirit of thankfulness, somehow, Krishna, you're burning off the reactions from my past misdeeds. In this way, you're blessing me that I can come closer and closer and closer to you. If you take this spirit, then you're already liberated. You're no longer living in the material world. Even though you have a material body, you're no longer even living in the material world. So it's better just to take whatever suffering is there and say, okay, this is burning off my past sins, let me just take it and be thankful that Krishna has given me the opportunity to come closer and closer. Just be thankful that I'm Krishna conscious, you see. Any other questions? Yeah. Preaching.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Like,
why do you, have you not read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Yeah, but it's the basic stage where, like you say, Bhagavad Gita, you go for temple, Bhagavatam and everything. But even when you start with Bhagavad Gita, the first question comes is, have you started preaching? Have you, at least in a certain way, like not in a full-fledged preaching?
You're wondering, are you asking, let me see if I can get I can't catch all the words, but are you asking where does preaching actually come into the self-realization process? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay. The answer is, Jare Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agaya Guru Horya Tare Desh. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the most realized spiritual master, the most potent spiritual master for teaching the self-realization process, has clearly told us this point, that when Krishna tells us to surrender, which is the essence of the self-realization process, that same exact instruction was given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the form of Yare Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh. So our surrender, Arjuna had a surrender, did he not? To fight the battle? We also have a surrender to fight the battle. His battle was with arrows, etc. Our battle is with transcendental knowledge. We are fighting a war with this material existence on the order of our spiritual master, on the order of Krishna. Our service, you see, devotional service means to please the spiritual master, to please the predecessor acharyas. So our particular service that we've been given is to make the world, is to ignite a spiritual revolution on this planet. That's our service. So, by surrendering to whatever order your spiritual master gives you, that's how you become self-realized. If he tells you to go to the Himalayas and chant Om in a cave for 10,000 years, that's how you become self-realized. Whatever instruction your spiritual master gives you, by faithfully carrying out his order, that is the self-realization process. Do you not know the 9 steps of self-realization? Shraddha, sadhusanga, vajanakriya, anartanavritti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prema. This is the self-realization process. The third step, vajanakriya, means to obey the order of the spiritual master. So, until you've actually come to the point of putting yourself under the orders of a spiritual master, you can only remain on the second level of the self-realization ladder. You can't go beyond them. And there's 9, you have to go all the way to 9 steps. So whatever instruction the spiritual master gives you. So, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has given us this instruction to make the world Krishna conscious. So that is how we become self-realized, by carrying out that instruction. Yes?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one who preaches these saints to others is most dear to me and no one ever...
That's right, it's confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. There's no one more dear to me than the preacher, nor will there ever be anybody more dear. Even Krishna himself said that. So, becoming self-realized is the process of becoming dear to Krishna. It's not some impersonal thing that you become God, like the Mayavadis think. It's a process of becoming dear to Krishna. So, the more you can glorify Krishna to others, that's how you become dear. So, I think you have misunderstood what is the actual process of self-realization. It's described nine different types of bhakti: shavana, kirtana, smarana, vandana, etc. The first step is you hear. The second step is you preach. Kirtana means preaching. It means kirtan by the music and kirtan by describing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So I think you need to develop a more complete and perfect understanding of the self-realization process. That without kirtanam, without glorifying the Lord, without broadcasting His glories, you see, then you're not really going to become self-realized. Sometimes they say, well, you know, there was an argument given by some yogis in Hardwar against ISKCON. Newsweek magazine went many years ago and interviewed the yogis. What do you think about the Hare Krishna movement? And some of the yogis said, well, you know, they criticized ISKCON because they're preaching. They said, you know, the thirsty go to the well. The well doesn't go to the thirsty. So they're criticizing ISKCON, you know. But what is done, what do pious men do in times of drought? They build irrigation dishes so that well water can be distributed to all the suffering people. So that is ISKCON, you see. When you're taking the well water, there's a drought in the world, literally also in Australia. But now it looks like maybe it's going away. Since I've come here, it's raining like anything. But Australia should pay my airfare, I think. So anyway, in times of drought, the pious, you see, they build irrigation ditches. Save the people from the drought. So therefore this preaching, it is an integral part of the self-realization process in this Kali Yuga. In other yugas, no. When everybody, during the Satya Yuga, when everybody was a Paramahamsa, there was no need for preaching. You would just sit and meditate for 60,000 years, and that was self-realization. But this is not the Satya Yuga. This is Kali Yuga. There is different dharmas in different yugas. In this yuga, the dharma is preaching. You understand? So by dharma, you become self-reliant. That's the thing. By doing your dharma, your spiritual duty. But you have to know, what is the yuga dharma? That is given in the Brihad Naradiya Pradhana. Haranama, 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 Iva Kevalam. Kalo nasteva 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 gatir anyata. Chant the holy names. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative for self-realization in this age. So this chanting process is, and that chanting is meant to be, that chanting is meant to be sankirtan, broadcast everywhere. Wide scale kirtan. Let everyone hear the kirtan. Therefore, we have Harinam Sankirtan, we distribute these books. This is our dharma, our duty, is to propagate this message. Some Hindus criticize, well, you people are like born again Christians, you know. Don't you realize Hindus don't try to spread the word? Sometimes we hear these arguments. Don't you realize you're just supposed to practice on your own? You're not supposed to tell anyone else about it. You know. This crippled sort of understanding is why we have a Hindu-Muslim problem in India right now, you see. Because the Brahmins didn't want to do their duty to teach. A Brahmin meant he is obliged to give knowledge, to elevate others who are not in knowledge of Brahman, to elevate them to the transcendental platform. That is the duty of a Brahmin. Because the Brahmins neglected their duty, they said, oh, these people are low class, just don't let your shadow touch me, whatever you do. You see? So those people will be said, why should I be a low-class Hindu when I can become a Muslim? Yeah. You see? So we have this whole Hindu-Muslim problem in India is because the Brahmins didn't do their duty to teach. You see? Yes?
Hmm?
Say again?
Selfishness. Isn't that not giving something you have good to others? Isn't that the nature of selfishness?
Yes. If I don't share something good with people who are missing that good thing, then I'm being selfish. That's right. Self-realization means the more you become selfless, that is your self. You understand? The more you become selfless, that is your self-realization. So a selfless person, whatever good thing he has, he dedicates his whole life to giving that good thing to those people who are lacking that good thing. That's a natural symptom. If he's actually self-realized, he cannot tolerate to see the people in the suffering and ignorance being dragged down by sensual desires into the animal kingdom in their next birth. You understand? He cannot tolerate that. It tears his heart apart if he's actually self-realized. If he's only thinking of his own self-realization, he's a materialist. He's not a realized sadhu. If he's only thinking of his own deliverance, you see? Yeah.
If that is the case, it's not that realizing you are not the body, you are the spirit soul. The definition of self-realization goes beyond that. That's what you're saying, right?
What is the question? Yes. To realize I'm not the body and the spirit soul, that's only the first step. Yeah. The next step is you have to realize who you are, not just who you're not. What is the nature of the spirit soul? To serve Krishna. Unless you realize that you're the servant of Krishna, your self-realization is simply a mental conception. It's not fully realized yet. The Brahmavadis who just merge into Brahman, knowing that I'm not the body, I'm spirit, what does Bhagavatam say about their self-realization? Vimukti maninas. It's in their minds only. It's not actual liberation. When you actually engage fully on the transcendental platform with all of your thoughts, words, and deeds 24 hours a day, then you're truly liberated, you see. Then you're actually self-realized. Any other questions?
You gave a wonderful glorification of Srila Prabhupada just earlier, and I was just wondering if in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's given us a general instruction. Is it enough for us as disciples to just follow that, like try and push on the preaching movement, or is it that our own spiritual master, disciple Srila Prabhupada, is meant to give us a specific instruction and we're meant to follow that?
Well, I was trained by Prabhupada with many direct instructions. He told me to do whatever my authority told me to do. So I know that that's Prabhupada's direct order to me, so the same principle can be applied to a grand disciple of Prabhupada. He wants you to obey your spiritual master. That's his direct order to you. So by serving your spiritual master, you're directly serving Prabhupada. You understand? Yeah. Prabhupada directly told me, he said, do whatever your temple authority says without questioning if it's right or wrong. He said, just do it. And Prabhupada very strongly instructed me to follow my authority. So, the same principle. That means my spiritual master gives me instruction, Prabhupada wants me to follow it. Simple thing. Yes.
The last word in Bhagavad Gita is peace.
Peace?
Peace. Peaceful.
Peaceful.
So how to attain that state?
Yes, by always thinking of how to please Krishna. If you think of making yourself peaceful, you'll never become peaceful because you're still selfish. But if you always think, what will please Krishna? You see, Arjuna wanted to have peace. He didn't want to fight the war. He wanted to have some peace. Let me just live in peace, Krishna. Don't ask me to fight this war. You see? But Arjuna could not be peaceful. Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava pishtami tvang dharma samudha cheta. You see? Now I have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. He became completely unpeaceful because he was just thinking of his own peace. But if you think, what will please Krishna? Even if I have to go through hell, it doesn't matter. If I can just make Krishna happy, you see, you put yourself in that state of mind, then I guarantee you, you will achieve paramam nirvanam, you see, the supreme peace. So don't think of your own peace, Mataji. You think of making Krishna happy. Think of making the spiritual master happy. Let there be peaceful. And then you'll be automatically be peaceful. Just like on this very hot day, one time, the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, they fanned him. And then when he was feeling cool, then they all felt cool. They fanned the spiritual master. And then they all felt comfortable when they made him feel comfortable. So you just try to see that Krishna is very happy. He's very peaceful. Very pleased with you. And then you'll become very happy. Even if you have to go to hell to do that, it's all right. You know the gopis, that story. They're prepared to go to hell for Krishna. So we have to follow the example of the gopis. And then we'll become truly peaceful. Any other questions? Okay. We'll stop here and then tomorrow morning we're having class again. What time? 7:45. 7:45, as many as possible come. We're going to study the most wonderful scripture that's ever been given in the history of the universe, Srimad Bhagavatam, tomorrow morning. We're going to go deep, deep, deep into the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam tomorrow morning at 7:45 a.m. Raja Vidra, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.